Great, It's Another Bass Podcast.
Hi there, and welcome to Oh Great, It's Another Bass Podcast. It's been too long.
Indeed.
Much has changed, I guess you could say, in our lives, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, my family has, we have grown exponentially in the amount of children that we have. We've gone from one to two. So there is that.
Nice.
And you've moved.
Yeah, new city, new job. I finally left Stockholm, but I left Stockholm after 15 years.
And, 15?
Yeah, and moved to Lund. In Skåne, yeah.
Yeah.
New job, a new city, new people, and it's been good so far.
That's nice.
And I'd like to thank my sister-in-law who been nagging us to pick up the podcast again.
Oh, thank you, Samuel's sister-in-law. We appreciate that.
So here we are. And I think this episode is going to be a bit, I wouldn't say chaotic, but it's going to be a bit more ad hoc. Like, we don't have any specifics planned like we usually have. Oh, because we're so organized. No.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what people have grown to know us
for. Yeah, and my voice is a bit hoarse because I had a cold last week and I'm still not quite over it. So I have this very low, sexy baritone today.
Yeah. Extended range lower.
Exactly. So what's been up? What have you been listening to lately?
I could probably say like toddler or kid children screaming, but he's actually pretty quiet, my son. It's really nice. He's a pretty content boy. He eats, sleeps, poops, repeats, and is happy a lot of times. So that's great. I've been listening to, let's see, I did give the new Devin Townsend record a spin. A few days ago, I've fallen back into like some old heavy metal that I listened to back in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, Hammerfall, Halloween, stuff like that, you know, my gateway drug into into music, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
I've been listening a lot to that. I watched this documentary. I'm probably the last guy in Sweden to watch it. Hård Rock på Export.
It's on. Oh, yeah.
Four 1 hour episodes about, you know, the great Swedish hard rock export, like everything from Europe to Ghost to earlier bands like, you know, Neon Rose and stuff like that. So it's a really good watch. If you haven't watched it already, I highly suggest you to do it, even if you're not into like metal and hard rock.
Yeah.
Go check it out because it's pretty darn interesting, actually.
Yeah.
So that got me, you know, excited about, you know, Hammerfall and stuff like that.
Nice.
So got into that. Been listening to some, you know, I've been writing some for Musikermagasinet, it's a Swedish music paper. Did a review of the X900 amp that we're going to talk about later on.
Nice.
And I can't listen to music when I write, or at least with like lyrics. I need to have something, you know, instrumental that I, you know, can't, you know, because lyrics, I guess, or singing like grabs my attention too much. So I've been listening to Glenn Gould, the Goldberg Variations. Like that's like my writing music. It's perfect for it. Nice. Gets me in the mindset. So yeah, so that's what I've been listening to. What about you?
Honestly, like my usual mix of stuff. Like I tend to, you know, like, oh, today I want to listen to this. Oh, like my mind works in mysterious ways sometimes. I sometimes get impulses, like, and something that reminds me of a song or an album, you know, or a feeling, and I just have to listen to that music that's associated with that feeling.
Yeah.
So let me check my history in Apple Music. Oh, I listened to Cheek.
Okay.
The disco band with a fantastic bass player, Bernie Edwards. Exactly. A lot of old, like old style funk, Ohio Players, Sly and the Family Stone, Graham Central Station.
Nice.
Yeah. you know, the classic, the origins of slap bass.
Yeah.
Basically, or pulling off even, because in Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself, he's not actually slapping, he's just literally pulling on the strings.
Yeah.
Like Larry Graham's technique evolved from, you know, like literally like grabbing the strings and pulling them like a clothespin, and then to the slap we know today. It's kind of interesting, and you can absolutely hear that on the early Sly recordings. You know, it's not the typical slap technique.
No.
And what else? I have some video game soundtracks, of course, because I'm a nerd. there's one soundtrack I listen to very often. It's by Yasunori Mitsuda, for the soundtrack to Chrono Cross, one of absolutely favorite games from the late 90s, early 2000s, which just has... It's literally like, I can't explain it, but that soundtrack is just, it's in like a 15 out of 10, if you ask me. It's like world music, but I mean, if you haven't heard it, I can't really explain why it's so good, but it's just an amazing mix of like moody, like upbeat songs. There's moody songs, there's sad songs, there's like... you have to experience it, and of course it holds a lot of memories for me as well, so you know, and yeah, then the usual Haken Periphery, like always. Between the Bird and Me.
The stuff that I know you for.
Yep.
So to speak. Did you see that Get Good Drums released the Periphery 5 drum library?
I saw
like
that
2 days ago, so I actually went out and bought it. It sounds killer. And I mean, when I do my demos for YouTube, you know, when I do full songs, or even when I'm actually producing and writing songs, I enjoy having something that's easy to get a good sound of, out of, you know, right out of the box. You don't want to, you know, spend too much time, you know, dialing in drum tones. You want to just, you know, shut up and play your guitar in a way. And the turbo function there is like amazing. You just, you know, select the full turbo mode and you're off to the races. Just add some parallel compression and you're good to go. Nice. So it sounds really good.
So speaking of bass, which is what we usually do. you mentioned the X amp, and for those of you not in the know, the X amp is the long-awaited X variation of Dark Glass's pedals into an amp.
Exactly, the 900 watt series that they've got.
Yeah. Which I've been asking for like 5 years, I think.
For as long as the X series has been out, as you know, in pedal format, you've been asking for for the amp. I was fortunate enough to get a hold of one to demo before the release, and it's actually the one that you're hearing right now.
Ah, nice.
We've got the Super Symmetry and the the EBS valve drive going before it, just to give it some additional, you know, tube vibe, I guess.
Yeah, I can hear the saturation.
It's really
nice.
It's very nice. It's a very cool setup, I must say. I've been enjoying that one quite a bit. I mean, you can really get that, you know, clanky Dark Glass metal tone that everyone loves, and it's amazing, but it's very versatile, I have to say, and you know, there's so many things about it that I really enjoy. You know, the option to add cabs or IRs to your XLR output. I don't know why that's not a standard in the bass world already. I know a whole lot of, you know, guitar amp manufacturers are catching on to that. I know Rev offer like tube heads with a built-in torpedo captor.
That's nice.
That's totally.
Yeah, and we spoke a lot about this because, again, distortion on bass guitar without any kind of, you know, high-end cutoff sounds usually horrible.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. If you have an amplifier with an XLR out that has a drive function that doesn't, you know, somehow tailor that drive sound to an XLR output, you just get this horrible pingy kind of like peaky top end.
Yeah, ice pick to the eardrum.
Yeah, exactly. And like you say, there's literally no reason for at least not to have the option of having, you know, some kind of cab simulation. Because here's a hint, children out there and adults, a bass tone doesn't really need too much high end. I mean, that's kind of in the name, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, especially those high treble. I mean, you're just going to compete with the cymbals and, you know, because every good audio engineer cuts, you know, the top end on the guitars and the bass and everything. And, you know, because there is only that much sonic space that you can fill out. So you have to you have to be careful with that so you don't saturate too much up there. And So, XLR output with an IR, and it's also got a pre-DI output, so you can actually record a completely clean signal, given that you don't have anything before the amp.
Yeah.
You can actually record a completely clean signal, or send it to front of house, or, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
Your cats are awake.
Of course they are. She's give me food, she says, but they already got food. Just being clingy.
I can see the bottom of my bowl. I'm gonna die of hunger.
Exactly. No, but getting back to the whole thing about we discussed this before, like I said, but the whole thing about XLR outputs is generally if you have a complete tone to send to front of house won't have to spend time to mess with your tone either. No. So it saves time live as well, because you don't have to, during the sound check, you don't have to spend time to getting your bass tone somewhat in a good frequency range.
No, and no one can bump the mic on the cabinet and, you know, mess things up. It's good to go. And usually when you're on stage, they always ask you to turn down on stage.
Classic. That's,
I mean, 99% of the time.
It's like,
can you turn the bass down on stage? Okay. Like, we had this, we did a festival gig in early July with 6 Feet Deeper, and we had like, just, you know, 2 minutes to do a sound check, essentially, just a line check, and I was playing and I was like, yeah, I can really hear myself. Feels great. Yeah, they're going to ask me to turn down, right? Can you turn the bass down? Yeah, of course. So, but that's one thing that I'm happy about with my rig, that I've split the, you know, I've got the dual outputs.
Yeah.
So I can only increase the volume on the high frequencies or the treble and the bass, so to speak. Or no, just the distortion, so to speak. So that actually isn't frowned upon as much as when you, you know, increase the volume of the entire rig, you know. Because when you do that, they get all of these extra low-end frequencies that they have to compete with. And doing it like this, you can actually hear yourself, but you don't mess things up for the front of house. So.
But on the other hand, and I will discuss this as well, but first of all, a sound check and a bass tone is very different from an actual live situation. If you have a room full of people, all those bass frequencies will literally get absorbed by the bodies, you know.
Yeah.
So turning down the bass too much during a sound check isn't usually a good thing, in my opinion. And honestly, getting a better stage sound, because usually the venues you play are quite small, unless you're a big rock star. Usually what you get from front of house is just, you know, sub bass and frequencies you don't really want. So I don't see the issue with having a bit of a louder bass on stage, because it helps the bass player get into the groove, but it also helps the overall live sound, in my opinion.
I guess it's just, you know, a question of I'm in charge.
We have 3 Marshall half stacks for the guitarist. Oh, here's the clean DI box for the bass player.
Here's a Sansamp for you.
Yeah.
No offense against Sansamp. I mean, it's been working out great for a lot of players over the years. But yeah. So, but anyways, back to the Xamp. It's a really solid piece of gear. I can't really fault it. I mean, you can always argue that, okay, it should have been programmable, like the Infinity the pedals, you know, where you can have 3 settings. However, this means that it's I think it's only like the IR section that's digital on this one. Yeah. So that's actually, you know, a good, I think it's a good, you know, contrast to say the Element. Exponent 500. Yeah. That's completely digital. And here you have a more or less completely analog, modern sounding metal amp. So, I mean, there is that. I've mounted it on a pedal board and it sounds really good.
But you can adjust it slightly through the Dark Glass Suite, right?
No, you can't adjust the compression or anything. You can change the IR files, however. You can adjust those, which, I mean, it sounds like, you can only load in IR files. But no, it's actually quite a lot of, you know, they've been expanding that library so damn much over the past like year. It's incredible. Yeah. You can change mic positions and stuff like that. So, I guess they don't want to venture too far from, say, the Alpha Omega 900 and the Microtubes 900 version 2. I guess they don't want to venture too much from that format. And I suspect that they have a certain, you know, circuit board that they've got figured out for the amps that they don't want to mess with too much. It's probably going to get an overhaul in the future. You know, you get a 1,800 watts head with, you know...
yeah.
But yeah.
With a coffee machine.
Yeah, with a coffee machine and and a built-in noise gate. Yes. But it sounds great. It's a good addition. I'm glad that they finally gotten it out there. Yeah. I guess, you know, the component shortages have been terrible for a lot of manufacturers. So, yeah.
And the X7 is by far my favorite distortion pedal from Dark Glass. I owned it for quite a while. I used it a lot. And it's apparently Tim Lefebvre's favorite Dark Glass pedal as well. Which is funny because he's a guy who's known for like playing a P bass with flats.
Yeah.
And, you know, using a tube, Noble tube preamp, and, you know, that's it. But he apparently loves the X7 very much.
I mean, you don't have to crank it. Mm. That's something that I think a lot of players, you know, don't realize. When you think about the X series and Dark Glass in general, they think, you know, overly saturated distortion that sounds like a angry beehive. But you don't need to, you know, you can actually dial down the drive and actually get a nice breakup tone as well. Yeah. But yeah.
Especially with the crossover for the frequencies, the low pass and high pass.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it, because like some of you may know, I want to have the, you know, the kind of light drive saturation that breaks up if I play hard. And the X, it has a very, it has a very like refined drive quality compared to the B7K, which is a lot more brutal. The Microtubes is a lot more like brown sounding.
Yeah, the vintage. Yeah, it's very mid heavy, the vintage ones.
Yeah,
I find in a good way, but yeah.
And the X7 is to me a bit more scooped, but not in a bad way necessarily. But it has, you know, the distortion fills out the sound really well, and that's what I love with the distortion. Yeah.
And the compressor is really good as well.
Yeah,
on it, I must say. That's the X amp. You want to talk about the Dark Ray as well, I see here. We actually got a list of subjects, so we're not completely ad-hocking it.
Yes. Kids. Dark Ray, they discovered a new type of manta ray at the bottom of the sea. No, for those of you not in the know, the Dark Ray is a collaboration between... We spend a lot of time talking about Dark Glass products on this podcast, but that's just like how it is. The Music Man Stingray obviously is a classic, you know, classic bass model. It's been around for close to 50 years and one of Leo Fender's greatest creations, apart from the P bass, the jazz bass, and the G&Ls.
Yeah.
And, you know the tone, it's a classic tone, it's punchy, it's fat. And did you know they actually started, the first prototype had a P bass pickup?
I did not know that. Cool.
There's a picture of it on the internet. It looks really weird, but it's basically, you know, not the big blocky pickup. It's just a P pickup in the same position.
I need to see this.
But anyway, a few years ago, the Music Man decided to do a collaboration with Dark Glass.
Oh, I found the picture. Mm, it's got it's got a reversed P by the bridge.
It's nice.
Holy cow.
And basically what they did is they put the Alpha Omega drive circuit into a Stingray, along with a two-band preamp, which I believe also is proprietary from Darkglass. I don't think it's the standard on a Ball two-band EQ. I think it's the EQ is also tailored from Darkglass, as far as I know.
I think so, too.
And it's an like the first time I heard it, I was like, because I usually don't hear a lot of Stingrays with drive. They usually have those
super clean.
Yeah, because they have that growly mid-range character anyway because of the pickup placement. But hearing, you know, the drive circuit in some bass is just like a revelation, because it just sounds amazing. Like from the lowest gain settings to the highest fuzz settings. Again, for those of you not aware, the Alpha Omega was a drive pedal that created for John Stockman of Carnival. Which basically is both a drive and a fuzz that you can blend seamlessly into one drive sound. And that's what they put in the bass, the dark gray. Apart from the fact you cannot blend the two distortion types, you have to select them individually. But it's the same distortion circuit. And it's just like... People say, oh, why don't you just put a pedal after the bass? I mean, you could do that, but I think...
That's not the point.
I think since the gain stage is directly in the bass, you get a completely different like reaction touch-wise to your dynamics and your playing.
Yeah, and you get... I mean... And it's cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
What other reason do you need? I mean, when people go like, oh, why don't you just put it in a pedal? Why don't you just... of course, but where's the fun in that? Where's the selling point?
Yeah, and the thing about me, I'm very likely gonna get a 5-string dark gray. I'm actually saving up for it right now.
Oh, you're doing it? Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, hint, hint. the thing about me is, I will able to have that drive sound anywhere I plug in. You know?
Yeah.
I bring my bass. We want a bit more grit in the bass tone. Yeah, sure, no problem. I'll just flip a switch and then I have it. You know.
You know what you should do as a mod to it?
No.
If I may suggest, you should change the output jack to a stereo jack.
Hmm.
So when you have it, you know, when you grab a regular cable, it's you get everything from it. But if you use a stereo cable, you can actually get the clean DI on one of the signals and the processed signal, if you will.
Interesting.
On one of them. I think that would be cool for recording purposes.
Yeah, Billy Sheehan mod.
Yeah, or, you know, Chris Squire or Geddy Lee or all. Yeah. I mean, the Rico. I guess it's a Rico sound approach, you could say. It just dawned on me. I mean, then again, where is the fun in that? There is no commitment in. There is no commitment in tone in that, and that's something that I think we like people should think about these days. We hardly ever commit to tones these days.
Yeah.
It's all about, you know, reamping and clean noise and stuff like that. No, you know.
And
here's
like,
my bass tone.
Yeah, and I spent so much time soul searching for the perfect tone. I guess we all do, and we all have an ideal of how we want our bass tone to sound.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the Stingray is a proven bass guitar that's worked for over almost 50 years, and it's a classic in the genre. In like, it works for any genre basically. And combining that with, you know, because I always think the Stingrays sounded better with a two band preamp. I think there's already so much mids in the Stingray sounds that you don't really need a three band preamp. But that's my personal opinion, because when you have this drive circuit in the bass, it also adds the grit in the mids that like a traditional mid control would add, and it also doesn't get, you know, hollow sounding, notched sounding.
No, and I mean, you have a P bass as well, so you're all set.
Yeah, exactly. And so. You're playing a 5-string. What are you playing? Western country music? No. I think, but it's a fantastic sounding bass, and I'm very excited to be able to acquire one. Right now, the dollar is quite high compared to the Swedish crown, sadly. But who knows? Maybe inflation will go down a bit, so it gets more a bit more affordable.
Yeah, or it gets higher and someone has to sell his. So you can
that too. But it's a beautiful. I mean, the build quality of the Stingray bases has continually improved since Sterling Ball took over. Like he took over from his father, and he's basically responsible for all the modern, you know, revisions of the Stingray. And the interesting thing about Stingray, it's gone through so many revisions, but it's still at its core the same instrument. Timeless tone that works for everything, and I mean it's one of those instantly recognizable bass tones, you know.
Yeah, I mean I've never owned a Stingray or a Music Man bass actually. Yeah. Never. I've owned several Fenders, but never, you know, never. I've played Music Man basses, of course, but never, you know, I've never had one at home for an extended period of time. I totally see the appeal in them, but I mean,
it's not your type of tone.
No, and I guess it's the design as well. I mean, the pickup is way it's wrong for me. Yeah. I mean, I'm so used to a P bass.
Exactly.
I'm old fashioned in that department, kid.
Nothing wrong about that.
No, but let's segue into another topic that I just sent to you, because shout out to Danny Higgins, who posted this on his Facebook just when we were about to start. His post popped up here in my feed. I'm gonna just quote it right off so you can see where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
Happy to die on this hill. 5 strings is the optimum number of strings on a bass. You get a handy low E flat and D, which sounds so much fuller than the octave above, plus access to more notes in any one hand position. Super handy for the inevitable moments you end up playing Mr. Brightside in D, or for busting out those Stevie Wonder tunes. Alternatively, a B string makes for a superb thumb rest, plus they look sick. So, fire away.
I agree with everything you said. that's literally exactly how I like to put it. Because Stevie Wonder is one of my biggest influences when it comes to bass, and he's usually his songs are usually in flat keys.
Yeah.
Because of the horns and everything, and you know the brass he uses. So like for instance, Higher Ground, it's E flat, not an E. Hint, hint, Red Hot Chili Peppers. And I mean, you could just tune your bass down a half a step and you could play it. But again, Nathan Watts, Stevie's a longtime bass player for over 50 years. He always uses a 5 string and he always plays it on the 5th string. So, I mean, it's all about what you use. I've played 5 strings for so long. I feel empty without, you know, the B string. And it's not so much about like the looks or anything, it's just cool, or the genre of music I play. I just prefer 5 strings. It's just what it is. I don't make a big thing about it. It's just what it is.
Yeah. I mean, for me, we talked about this before, I'm a 4 or 6 string guy.
Mm.
5 string, I mean, and I own 2 5 strings at the moment. And I prefer 6 strings to 5 strings, because 5 strings, it feels like, you know, a 4 string with an additional low B.
Yeah.
Whereas a 6 string is an extended range to me.
Mm.
I've actually traded my 6 string with my friend Robert Thor. We've swapped basses for a while. So I got his 4 string Dingwall Combustion, and he got my 6 string Voodoo.
Oh.
And I tuned this Dingwall to BAD, which is, you know, and it just works so well for that bass. Yeah. And you know, I prefer using a 4 string tune to BEAD compared to a 5 string, if I'm being completely honest. There is just something about, you know, a 4 string in my hands. I know, you know, it's about positions and all of that. And I mean, I played a 5 string for quite a few years, but there's something to four, I guess.
Yeah. Something that bothers me about extended range basses is once you start adding more strings, the string spacing usually gets tighter.
They get narrow. Yeah.
And for me, being almost 2 meters long and having hands like a gorilla or maybe a orangutan, the spider fingers, as John Petrucci always remarks about John Myung's fingers. For me, I can never get along with the too tight of a spacing. I've had a lot of basses that I love the sound in, but just like I want to have 90 millimeters, you know, the standard Fender string spacing on all my basses, regardless of strings. I mean, if I had an 8 string, I would have 90 millimeters.
How's the string spacing on the Dark Ray?
It's a standard 17.5 millimeters.
Okay.
That's music men always use. And it's funny because a few years ago, I think Sterling Ball said he wanted to try introducing a 90 millimeter spacing version of the Stingray 5, because it has been a lot of requests about it. And it would be, you know, in line with Leo Fender's, you know, traditions and stuff. It's 0.75 of an inch, so it's but I mean I get the argument why you want a tighter spacing when you have more strings, because you get a bigger neck, it gets heavier, you know, it gets top heavy and so on. And it's just easier to navigate for some people, but to me it just doesn't feel right, you know.
You know what I've just found, you know, just googling about 19 millimeter string spacing. The FGN J Standard Mighty Jazz, have you seen that one?
No.
I'm gonna send it to you right now. This is something new, kids. You know, doing things ad hoc. But check this out. I'm sending it to you on Messenger. So it's a FGN, that's the factory who made
Fujigen.
So it's made in Japan. It's not that bad of an investment, money wise. It's blue.
Nice.
It's a 5-string jazz with a humbucker. It's got the EMG J5 in the neck and MM5 humbucker in the bridge.
Nice.
It's got a 19 millimeter string spacing by the bridge.
Excellent.
It looks really nice. It's a 24 frets. You're I think you're gonna like that one. I've sent it to you.
Yeah, that's nice.
So I think they released these ones just, you know, a few weeks back or a week back or so. Yeah. I heard it on the excellent bass podcast, In the Pocket. So shout out to Chris and Johnny for that podcast. It's an excellent one. So they talk about these basses because back to strings spacing.
The whole debate about strings, how many strings you want to play, like to me it's just stupid. Like play whatever the heck you want. Don't let anyone tell you not to. And I remember getting, like, I talked about this before, I think as well, but during my music education years, I was always taught, oh, don't play like that. What I was playing was wrong. I was a lot into, you know, progressive music and 6-string bass players and so on. I never got a teacher who actually was willing or able to teach me how to play a 6-string, you know. And on the other side, why isn't 4 enough, blah blah blah. And I mean, they worked my fundamentals, and they made me a better bass player in the end, except for a few exceptions. But again, like, expressing yourself musically is all about individuality, and and they really stifled my creativity looking back at it. And I guess that's the risk of any music education, because you have people set in their ways how they teach, what I think is optimal, and I get that.
And what they enjoy listening to and playing and all of that. So there's always that. However, you should never, you know, intrude on a student's, you know, taste. Yeah. You know, that's, oh, you can't listen to that. It shouldn't be more like, you know, oh, you want to play that? Let's figure this out together.
Yeah. I mean, nobody looks weird at Anthony Jackson for playing a 6-string, and he's been playing a 6-string for as long as 6-string's been around, basically.
Yeah. he literally has.
I mean, he's literally synonymous with playing a 6-string bass, and that's just it. And again, that whole debate is so pointless to me because it gives you nothing. It's all about, you know, marking territory and thinking you're better than other people. And when you start to look at music that way, you lose the entire point with music, in my opinion. It's just a tool, I mean, at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. It's old guys who like enjoy smelling their own farts.
Yeah, I guess exactly.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
No offense to your old teachers, but yeah, it's you know.
Oh, isn't four strings enough for you? Why do you need that? Why do you need pedals? What do you need? It's like,
yeah, no, I need five strings because I can rest my middle finger on it and show it to you. That's why I play five strings.
Yeah.
No, but it's funny because I've never owned a Fender. I can admit that I've borrowed some and I played some, and I have nothing against them. But every single time I play live, it's like, oh, great sounding bass, or great bass playing. Yeah, great music. But why don't you get a proper bass? I was like, if you enjoy the music and enjoy my playing and how the way my bass sounded, what does it matter? You know?
Yeah.
it's such a backwards way of thinking, and it does nothing to progress, you know, the acceptance of music.
No. And that's the way it's gonna be, I guess.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, that's just people in general, the human tragedy.
Yeah, I guess. Speaking of playing, you've got a new rig.
Ooh, yeah. I was about to bring this up anyway. So, about 11 years ago, I'm going to tell the whole story. You can't stop me.
It's a what? I mean, 11 years.
Yeah.
That's a fairy tale in the making.
Specifically, 11 years ago, 2012. I was out of work. I was still studying by the time, but I was out of work for the summer. Generally, being in a bad place. But anyway, there was this amp being sold on the Pratabas, the talking Swedish talk bass equivalent, at a very good price, and it was the Warwick Hellborg system, designed by Jonas Hellborg or Hellborg. Famous for playing with Mahavishnu and a lot of jazz, like John McLaughlin and stuff. Sean Lane, obviously, fantastic guitar player and duo. He designed an amplifier system with the bass manufacturer Warwick. I think it debuted in 2007. Could have been,
I think, or somewhere around that.
Somewhere around that time. And basically, what he did, he pulled an old Neve preamp out of a console and made it into a bass preamp, and also designed like an extremely, you know, efficient and clean power amp to go along with it, and a series of cabinets. That just sounds spectacularly well. They're like, they're very linear. They present the sound the way you imagine it in your head, basically. So 11 years ago, a preamp and I believe a stereo power amp was out on Pratabas for a very good price, and I was literally like 5 minutes late buying it. And honestly, it's been like grinding in my back of my head for so long, honestly, because there was never another rig being, you know, being for sale in Sweden since that moment. And like the first time I tried that rig live, it was like a revelation, because I tried it with a P bass with flats, and it was just like the nuance in the tone and the richness of the tone was just like mind-blowing.
Was it this very rig that you tried?
No, it wasn't this particular. The rig I tried was actually stolen a few years ago. It was at Musik Utan Gränser, MUG, in Gothenburg. And sadly, that rig was stolen, or the preamp was stolen from them. But it's... There's very few moments in life where I've tried gear where you're like instantly, it's like you're like your jaw drops to the floor, you know, that kind of.
Yeah, you fall in love.
Yeah, and that was one of those moments, and you just realized all the bass tone you've been missing was suddenly there, you know. like the richness of the, all the frequencies and like I said, the dynamics, and it's yes. So all these years I've been like, oh, I'm still like regretting the day I didn't pull the trigger fast enough. Fast forward to last year, and one of my friends on Facebook sent me a message on Messenger and says like, oh, are you still looking for that Hellborg system? It's like, kind of depends, like, what do you have?
So, I have it.
Yes. So it turns out he had a friend who was selling his Hellborg system, because he was sponsored by Warwick. He was actually a professional bass player. I'm not going to mention his name, but he played in some big metal bands in Stockholm. And he was sponsored by Warwick, both for basses and amps, so he used them. But now he's moved on to something else, I guess. But to make a long story a bit shorter, I pulled the trigger after a bit of negotiation a few months. I decided I wanted to get myself something when I was moving, and I sold my apartment. And it took a while for me to realize I like how much I craved that rig. And I pulled the trigger on it, and I got it at a like stupidly good price.
Yeah, I mean, I've been looking up the price now. Yeah. Just for the power amp, you have to pay, quite a bit. So, like twice the amount of money you paid for the entire rig, actually.
And I got a preamp. I got two 500 watts mono power amps. And we're not talking about Class D. This is pure Class A circuitry. This is like highest end components all throughout. And I believe it's the high cab. It's a two 12-inch speakers. And they're all in flight cases as well. High quality flight cases that have been tried and proven on the road. And I'm getting the rig next week, actually.
That's amazing.
It's from Stockholm.
It's gonna take up some space in your apartment for sure.
Yeah, I've already dedicated a space next to the computer for it. So it's not that big, like area wise, but
but tone wise,
it's amazing. I don't know if you've tried it at all.
No, I've never tried it. Mm. I mean, I've seen it and I've heard the jokes about it because when it was presented, I remember like when it was presented, everyone was like, oh. It's okay. When it was presented, everyone was like, oh, it can't be that full range. Mm. That's impossible.
Yep.
But
it is.
Yeah. I hope to try one someday. Yeah. I enjoy, like, I spent some seconds just looking through some pictures of it. Mm. I think they had a stereo power amp as well for it.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And I'm also getting the big cab at a later date.
Oh.
Which is your favorite, and you're going to be jealous because it's two 15-inch speakers.
Yeah.
So basically, I'll bring my apartment complex down with a bass.
Yep.
speaking about jokes about that rig, I remember there was... because when it was released, the prices were like out of this world.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was super expensive.
I think the preamp was at least $2,500 or even more, like $3,000 or something like that. And the power amps were at least half of that price. So the price I got it, I mean, I'm not going to tell it for you people, but it was a good price.
It was a very good price. Even I would have bought it at that price.
And now it's gonna be exciting because I haven't been playing bass since I left my last band 2 years ago, and I'm in a new town, gonna find some new music to play, and it's gonna be nice.
Yeah, are there any like jams or something there you can go to? Just, you know, bring your bass and...
You know, I thought there would be, since Lund is a student town, a university town.
Yeah.
But apparently the city hasn't, like the city council hasn't been putting any resources into the cultural life, sadly.
Oh, that sucks.
They spend every like single penny on, you know, the technological university and the, you know, that kind of stuff. But obviously in Malmö and Köpenhamn, there's a big jazz scene and music scene. So, yeah.
Yeah. And how far is Malmö for you?
I'm going to stay for 12 minutes with the train.
Okay. Then go to Malmö and play some bass.
Copenhagen is like in what, an hour away or something like that.
that's amazing. Yeah. Love Copenhagen.
Yeah, so. And the great thing about Copenhagen is like they never question paying musicians well.
No.
You have like a standard jazz gig where you just play like from the real book. You walk away with like a really good food, good money, and just appreciation for the art.
Yeah, that's... Take note,
Yeah, take Sweden. Note, Sweden. This is how you treat musicians. Because here's a secret. It's fun to play music, but you know what isn't fun? Studying music for 11 hours and not getting paid for it.
No. I mean, it's kind of funny, like... Going back to that documentary that I was talking about, the Swedish music wonder, if you will, and I don't know if you follow Ole Englund on YouTube, but he did an interview with Rick Beato actually.
Oh yeah,
when Rick was here in Stockholm, and talked about, you know, the Swedish music, you know, the wonder, I always think about that, you know, we're so damn proud of, you know, the export that we got. I mean, it doesn't matter what political view you have, everyone is like, oh yeah, Sweden, we're great with exporting music. But these days, what are we doing to, you know, help that? What are we doing for kids who want to learn how to produce music, who want to learn how to play an instrument? I mean, we're
doing nothing.
We're downsizing everything. Now it turned political here, but I mean, we have to look at ourselves. Like, okay, we've got a huge export of music, like in every damn genre of music, like from ambient chill out music for whales to you know, death metal to you know, everything. We need to take care of that. We need to
And then, like you said, the issue is a lot of politicians, and this goes for both of the political aisles, they tend to look at it as an enterprise. It's just an export and just like something to sell to other countries to like promote Sweden. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it kind of takes away, you know, because that's usually not what you're thinking when you're a small child starting to learn an instrument. You just, like, you have to focus on the actual music part of the music, you know.
Yeah, not the export aspect of it. Yeah, I totally agree on that. Anyways, time for the worst segue ever.
Go.
Yeah, we had a few other topics. Mm-hmm. We got another piece of news: the Aguilar.
Yes.
I mean, every time when I read it, I know how to pronounce it, but every time I'm gonna pronounce it, I pronounce it wrong. Aguilar, the Aguilar pedal. They got a new preamp out, which you've probably seen by now, so we're not gonna touch about that upon that any further, unless you're like super excited about it.
I could just shortly. It's based on their 700 series amps, and the Aguilar house sound is a very safe sound. It's like a sound that always works. It's big. It's like, it's familiar, it's comfortable, it's like putting on your favorite pair of slippers, it just works. There's nothing particularly maybe exciting about it, but it's just a solid foundation for a bass tone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna confess something, the only time that I've ever, like, one of the biggest disappointments gear-wise was when I got to borrow a tone hammer, the pedal, which has, because like you say, the clean sound is great, but then I tried the distortion, it was like, this is shit. I couldn't get it sound good.
The distortion on the tone hammer is not really a distortion, it's a saturation.
No. Yeah, I figured as much. I was like, yeah, this is disappointing.
Marcus, our mutual friend Marcus, described it as a sewing machine.
Yeah. Which I guess it has in common with the Ampeg SGTDI, where the the drive is not, it's more of a saturation rather than a distortion tone. And I've talked about this before, so I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I mean, if you want that classic, I mean, it's the same, I guess, with the Aguilar and the Ampeg. And, you know, if you want that classic tone, they are amazing for that. Nothing bad about them.
No.
However, if you want something else or more, yeah, go get something else.
Yeah. We were going to talk about strings. I know you're a big Roto Sound fan.
Yeah, I'm actually endorsed by them.
Oh, it's really? Like, I didn't know that.
It's actually, I think that's my one and only true endorsement. Mm. I've been with them since 2016.
That's cool.
Which was the year... I mean, I've told the story before, but it's pretty funny. I reached out to them like, hey, I've been playing your strings for quite a few years already. Would you be interested in me doing a video of all of your strings and, you know, that? And they were like, yeah, sure, we're going to make you an artist. and the same day that I placed my first order for all of their strings... I was in Greece with my wife. It was our honeymoon.
Oh yeah,
actually.
I remember, and because you missed the Haken show in Stockholm.
Yeah, exactly. And I checked my phone, just reading the news, and there was this big headline: Brexit. Like, what's Brexit? I had missed out on Brexit. I guess most people had here in Sweden, and I was like, "What's Brexit?" Okay, they are leaving the EU.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. So I was so happy about getting an endorsement from a company within the EU because,
and now it's all ruined.
Yeah, but it has worked out really well because they have, I'm not going to say worked around, but you essentially order from...
like a warehouse in Europe.
Yeah, exactly. Or from like the distributors in Europe or Sweden or so. So they have a way, so you don't have to pay, you know, the shipping costs plus, you know, the import fees. Everything is already calculated throughout.
That's nice.
So I've been a Roto Sound guy for many years, and I mean it's what I'm used to.
Yeah,
there is the feel of, you know, they're stainless steel strings and stuff like that. On my Dingwalls, I use the Dingwall strings, of course, because they just fit. So there's, I mean...
And they're tensioned for that scale as well.
Yeah, they work really well for that. But on all of my other basses, I've got the Roto Sound strings. I got the Steve Harris strings. The Drop Zone set on my BB bass, nice. Actually. So it's... Yeah. So, I mean, they've been working out great for me.
And they say that Roto Sound were the first to produce round wound strings for bass. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but the story is John Entwistle of The Who. He was always lacking treble in his bass tone. And back in the days, in the early 60s, bass strings were flat wound strings because they wanted to mimic the upright tone. But John Entwistle was like, no, I want the full range of sound in my bass tone. I want more treble. And
I'll play bass guitar.
Yeah, and you can hear, there's a clip from when they're playing My Generation Live. And I think it's from 66 or something. It's a color TV show. And you can literally hear like the spanking new strings on John Entwistle's bass. And that's a funny thing that not a lot of people realize how much John Entwistle meant for bass playing, not just like technically and taking, you know, center stage and being out there with his playing, which he was, but also the technical side. He was a lot into, you know, the splitting his signals and having like separate bass rigs and, you know, the technical stuff. He was really into that.
It did a lot of, you know, stuff that we take for granted these days, I guess you could say. And I mean, I actually watched a video about this a week or so back. There was actually, I think Dan Electro did some sort of round strings actually before Roto Sound, and he was playing out around with this Dan Electro bass. However, it was short scale and, you know, tiny and teeny. so he went to Roto Sound and they started doing, you know, mass producing the first, you know, regular.
Yeah,
round one strings. So
not only that, John Entwistle also popularized actually playing with, you know, your index and middle fingers.
Yeah.
A lot of bass players were just playing like with their thumb at that point, but he also revolutionized how you approach like actually like attacking the strings.
Totally.
And we can see that a lot with like Ryan, from take a modern bass player like Ryan Martini. He borrowed a lot of his technique, you know, playing over the fretboard like John Entwistle does, you know, tapping harmonics and that kind of stuff. And John Entwistle did all that like in the late 60s, early 70s. And it's just now getting popular again. And it's amazing how before his time he was.
There is a amazing picture of Billy Sheehan, Steve Harris, and John Entwistle at the Brothers and Factory. And I heard a podcast with Billy where he was like, when they were taking that picture, I think Steve told him, like, can you believe that we're here with John Entwistle? Can you believe that we're here with him? Because he was such a huge influence on both of them.
Yeah. There's a lot of funny stories about John Entwistle, and I know we're getting off topic with strings, so I'm gonna get back to it. But apparently, he didn't have a driver's license, but he owned like a huge collection of classic British cars, which he used as drinking cars. He basically let his chauffeur drive him around while he was just in the back drinking. I mean, how much more rock and roll can you get?
No, he really went out. I mean, he died of a heart attack in Las Vegas.
Oh, really?
due to too much cocaine. I mean, that's a rock and roll ending for you.
But getting back to strings, I think we both prefer stainless strings.
Yeah.
For me, it's I had a revelation when I first tried DR strings, specifically their fat beam strings, which I believe originally was designed for Marcus Miller, but then I think he switched to high beams. And now he plays Dunlop strings. I don't know. But anyway, I don't know exactly, but they use a technique called compression winding or something like that. They're all done by hand. All the windings are done by hand. They've always done that, I think. And I think Rotosound are still doing by hand.
Yeah, they're
well.
Still doing that, yeah.
But I mean, coated strings, they last a long time, but the thing about the stainless DR strings is they last like forever, and they still sound amazing even when they're not completely new. The brilliance of the strings, it just never dies. I got a set of fat beams when I put on my bass during the summer, where it was like a very damp and humid summer.
Yeah.
Everyone was sweating like crazy, and I kid you not, I used those strings for at least 6 months, and they still sounded good.
Cool.
Yeah, so yes, they do cost a bit extra compared to other strings, but the longevity is amazing. And
yeah, you can't beat that. I found that coated strings, I mean, I've tried Elixir and all that, and it's not for me.
Yeah.
There is something about the feel that I don't really don't like,
especially when the coating starts to come off. They just feel bad.
Yeah, it looks terrible, and there's just something about I'm not a fan of Elixir strings. It feels like I'm slipping, like my fingers aren't, you know, gripping on them. And
Have you ever tried Fast Fret from GHS?
Oh yeah, I've got a few bottles actually. Yeah. I use it. I started using it when we did the second Structural Disorder album because I had I was using D'Addario strings at the time, and I had the Pro Steels, which I really liked. However, they died like instantly almost. Yeah. So after like every take, or you know, once I was done, you know, playing, I rubbed my bass down with Fast Frets.
Yeah.
It's a really good, you know, it's a really handy tool if you want to, you know, prolong the life of your strings.
For those of you not knowing what we're talking about, it's basically a grease for your strings. But it's not a sticky grease. It makes like it makes transitions over the frets faster, and it also keeps dirt away from the strings. So.
Yeah,
it's basically if you don't want to use them if you have like a high string action and play like really, but if you want to play fast stuff, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, like I said, it gives you some more, it extends the life of your strings. So I use them, you know, if I've got, you know, 2 gigs in a row and I don't want to change strings between,
yeah.
I sometimes, you know,
yeah.
sheet and do that. So
yeah, it's nice. That. But trying to get back to the strings topic, I don't know. It's I used to think as long as they're new, it doesn't matter what kind of strings you are, you're using, but... But once I tried DR strings, I was like, wait, this is how a string should not only sound, but also feel.
Yeah.
Because they use round cores. And I find that round core strings, they respond to me much better than hex core strings.
Okay.
Yeah, they have a softer feel. They're not as high in tension. And they just, I don't know, like bending and, you know, doing like small dynamic stuff just works better for me.
I have no idea what my strings are, if they are round one or hexagonal.
I think Rotosound has both, I think. But
yeah,
DR
probably.
Are known for their for having round cores, both guitar and bass. And I don't know, it's just they feel better to play for me.
Let's see here what we got. Tone, blah, blah, blah. Oh, they've really expanded their homepage.
Mm.
Let's see. Doesn't say it, probably says somewhere, but I can't find it right now.
But at the end of the day, it's all about preferences. Like like when people say, oh, I love Ernie Ball slinkies, it's like, but they lose their tone in like 2 hours of playing.
Yeah, they're worse than the Steve Harris set.
It's nothing wrong with them, they're like they work, but it's just I don't mind paying extra for quality. That's what I'm getting at.
No, exactly. And I mean, it's such a huge, you know, the field thing also is so damn important.
Yeah.
That's why, I mean, I've grown to know what I can expect from Rotosound strings.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm sticking with them, I guess.
But you use quite a heavy gauge, right?
It's a 110... to 43 on most of my basses, and the Steve Harris one is 110 to 50, and then 130 to 50, or what is it? Yeah, 130 low B. Anyways, so it's a pretty, you know, heavy E string, but lighter G string, so you can get up there and bend really nicely.
Because I tend to use a lighter gauge if it's available.
Okay.
I tend to use like all zeros.
Okay.
And I find, for me, a slightly thinner string gives a better fundamental. A thicker string gives better overtones and harmonics.
Yeah.
But for my playing, I find the lighter strings work really well.
Yeah. I mean, the Dingwalls are 127 to, I think, 45. And at first, I was skeptical about the 127 on the low B, but it works.
Yeah.
I mean, I've tuned it down to G.
Yeah.
No, I mean, no issues because you have the, you know, the scale length, and those strings really work for that that sort of job, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But it's all about preference. A thicker string
will
probably work better with distortion because, again, you get that natural overtone harmonic series that you don't get with a lighter string. And it's just my bass playing and my tone is much more based on the fundamentals rather than the overtones. So
mine is the opposite.
Yeah. So I tend to go for the lighter sets. And I don't know, I find that helps with my dynamics in playing as well. So,
yeah. Nice.
But like at the end of the day, string choice is like clothes choice. You wear what you like.
Yeah. And what fits.
Yeah, exactly.
And suits you. Yeah, and what you can afford also.
True. I mean, you don't go out and buy the most expensive stuff when you just started playing.
No, or maybe you do because you have the money, but yeah.
But then there's also people who like the sound of old dead round rounds.
Yeah,
which I don't understand. I can take old flats, but not old roundwounds.
I mean, I love Lee Sklar when he's like, "Yeah, do you got any basses with flats?" But no, but I got a tone control. So
right, exactly.
Just roll it off.
And he also has the producer switch on all his basses.
Yeah, love that. It's like
To end this podcast and end on a joke. Lee Sklar, one of the most recorded basses of all time. like a legend in both studio
yeah,
and live.
You've heard him. If you heard music, you've heard
him. And he basically got tired of front of house and producers always telling him to, oh, could you adjust this in your tone? Could you adjust this?
Can you give us more attack, more treble?
Yeah. So in all his basses, he basically has a fake tone, a fake pot or fake switch that does nothing, literally nothing. But he switches this so the producer can see it. And it's like, oh, that's instantly better.
Yeah, but, and he just moves his hand.
Yeah, just, he literally did nothing, just moved like how he attacks the strings. And it's the same live. He has this small, it's like a battery-powered FM radio.
Yeah, he went out with the store that was a Russian power amp. 1,000 watts pure tube power. And he showed it in a video. It was like, yeah, it's a Radio Shack FM radio. Lights up.
He's like the ultimate troll when it comes to because as far as I know, he uses never uses effects. He's a bass and amp kind of bass player. He doesn't even use like compression.
No,
everything comes from his fingers.
Yeah, and he has some really nice amps. I can't remember what he's using right now.
I think the
which sound amazing. Yeah. And I mean, the productions that he play on, I mean, he never ever. I mean, there's going to be an audio engineer who knows what he's doing on those gigs.
Yeah.
So there is no need to worry about, you know, getting like the right type and amount of compression. Someone else is going to figure that out for you. At the venue as well, so
And he's kind of a bit player. If you don't know Lee Scar, like he's the kind of like he goes from playing like roots and fifths in a country song to playing like advanced fusion with Billy Cobham and stuff. And it's like if you see him, I mean he gets this all the time. Obviously, he looks like Gandalf from Lord of the Rings. With a big beard and everything. He's like literally the wizard of bass because like he's the ultimate versatile bass player in that if you put him into a studio, regardless of what genre and everything, he just fits.
Yeah, he does his job.
Yeah.
And does it perfectly.
He's a career bass player like throughout.
Totally.
And that's a good note to end it on. Listen to Lee Scar.
Totally.
He's very sensible when it comes to bass playing. He's a great bass player and he's funny.
He's extremely funny, I might add.
anyway.
Great to be back.
Yeah,
great to be back with the podcast. Mm. Hopefully we can do this on a more regular basis.
Yeah.
All puns intended. Yeah, all puns intended. Maybe not, you know, every week, but every other week or so. Now that, you know, my work starts back up in 2 weeks and, you know, I've got two kids now, so I have to work around that, but we'll figure it out.
Hey, you can put them on as executive producers.
Yeah. Noisemakers. Yeah. Hope that you guys enjoy us being back. Let us know in the comments if you want to, you know, the comments on YouTube, if you want us to, you know, talk about something else or, you know, talk about something bass related that you're curious about, you know, thoughts on brands or strings or players or what have you.
Or just meme us all day long and give us shit for anything. That's just
go ahead.
Equally as fun.
So... Until next time.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.